Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, listeners' ears, and welcome to this week's edition of the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Back once again like a renegade master and brought to you by the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK and Computerworld UK. Each and every week we huddle up in our audio carbuncle in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed discussion on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. We're coming in your ears courtesy of the kindness of Audio Technica, who are good enough to provide the mics on which you hear our sweet, sweet tones. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in discussion by the bearded Chris Martin, Consumer Tech Editor of PC Advisor.
Hello.
The formerly somewhat bearded David Price, Acting Editor of Macworld UK.
All right.
And the never knowingly bearded Mr. Scott Carey, Online Editor of Techworld. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
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 So this week we're going to be discussing NWC and the FBI before taking a break from our acronyms to talk a little bit about challenger banks and disruption in the financial services industry. So strap yourself in, it's going to be a wild ride. So, Chris, I believe this weekend you're going to be flying off to Barcelona to report from MWC. Can you explain a little bit for our listeners what MWC is and why it matters?
Yeah, sure. So MWC stands for Mobile World Congress. It happens in Barcelona every end of February / beginning of March. And it's one of the kind of three big tech shows of the yearly calendar. And as the name suggests, it's focused on mobile tech. So we're talking phones, tablets, and these days, many, many smartwatches and other things like VR headsets.
And specifically this time, this year, 2016, what should we be looking out for? What's exciting about MWC?
So, yeah, we're flying out on Sunday morning. So nice early one for the weekend.
That's pretty exciting.
Yep. Much earlier than I would normally get up on a Sunday, but on Sunday we'll be heading to various press conferences ahead of the show, which starts on Monday. So that includes Huawei, LG and Samsung in that order, although Huawei and LG are the exact same time, so listeners and viewers are going to have to choose which one they want to tune into there. And then Sony's press conferences on Monday at the show. So Huawei, we think, are going to be announcing the P9, which is their new flagship, and there's going to be possibly some kind of laptop device from them, which would be a bit unusual. Mm. LG has already said that it's going to be LG G5 Day, so that's their new flagship phone, which will then compete with the Galaxy S7, which is kind of heralded as the star of the show at the moment.
So it'd be fair to say that that Samsung's Galaxy S7 is the phone that most people are interested in right now.
It has got a lot of hype and interest, and a lot of leaked information over the last few weeks and months. But unfortunately, looking pretty similar to the Galaxy S6 at the moment. There was rumoured to be up to 4 models of the S7, but it looks like we're just getting to 2, which would be the regular model and the Edge version, and they look pretty similar to the S6 and the S6 Edge.
So the Edge being the sort of wraparound screen version of the normal flagship.
Yeah, so it's got a dual Edge screen, as Samsung calls it, which basically means the sides head towards the back of the phone, if you like, and you can do little things like swipe in from the side to get your contacts and shortcuts to apps. It doesn't do a great deal, but people seem to like it.
Looks pretty cool. Looks different.
It does look very nice. But functionality-wise, is a bit disappointing. So maybe they'll have added some software things so it does more, even though the technology on the hardware side is the same. We'll have to see.
I mean, one of the things that I think You know, there are so many numbers now. You've got the P9,
yeah.
the G5,
yeah.
and the S7.
Yeah.
And I noticed David sitting over there looking mildly smug as a Macworld guy. But,
not smug at all, definitely.
But Apple did start this. There's this idea yeah. of every year we essentially iteratively update our product and we call it a new product, which is, just, you know, it's very good as a marketing thing, but it's not like every time Dell adds a bit of RAM to a laptop, they rebrand it as a new product.
No, it is a completely different world, it seems, and the refresh cycle is very quick. Sony has been doing even 6-month cycles, or they appear to have stopped doing that. So it doesn't look like we'll be getting a new phone from Sony, in terms of the Xperia Z6, but it looks like we'll get a tablet, which normally happens at every MWC.
Sure.
So hopefully from Sony we'll be getting some tablets, multiple. So far they've only done one at a time, but it'd be nice to have a couple of different sizes at least.
So, come on guys, are you excited about MWC? Are you excited about new smartphones?
I can't say it's blowing me away. I guess the thing must be trying to stand out from the crowd at an event like this where there's so many people doing so many similar things.
Yeah.
Is there a sort of a tend towards gimmicks? This thing about the edge screen.
It is nice if you see it in the flesh. And actually, yeah. the Galaxy S6 Edge has yeah. proven to be a huge success, hasn't it? Because it does, but you're right, it's like differentiation.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about, and I hate to shoehorn Apple into everything I talk about, but... Apple doesn't go to things like this at all. It has its own events. And I do wonder, what's the advantage of cramming yourself in with everybody else, struggling for recognition, rather than having your own individual event to announce things?
It's a good question, because we see the same thing. So, and Apple's not entirely immune to this, right? Because Apple will launch its iPhone around IFA, just before IFA, to essentially, in August, September time, to essentially scupper other people, but also to benefit from the heightened interest, I guess. And everyone's got a different approach, I would say. It's just my personal opinion, but Samsung is going to kill the show, basically. It's going to be the biggest device. So then the likes of LG and particularly Huawei, and by the way, Chris, excellent pronunciation of Huawei. We're going to talk about Xiaomi soon. We're not, it's just I just wanted to pronounce that. But Samsung, you know, but benefits from the other products clustering around it because it creates more interesting overall, and then the rest of them, LG, those guys are kind of attempting to ride the coattails a little bit. I mean, it's a bit like the order in which they go is always quite interesting.
Yeah, so it's a bit different with CES. There is a press day where there is from like 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. there is press conference after press conference with like a 15-minute gap.
Mm.
Whereas these are their own events, like they're not part of MWC. They're just to coincide with MWC.
Yeah, that's so, fringe.
So because they're on Sunday, the show actually starts on Monday, whereas LG, Samsung, they've booked these completely separate venues.
But in Barcelona.
But just they happen to be in Barcelona.
Because they know everyone's there.
Yeah, so they're announcing the phones, whatever they announce, then the show starts the following day. Only Sony's doing it at the show on their stand.
Mm.
So yeah, it's interesting trying to compete. LG doesn't normally do this, actually. They normally have a separate event, like you say.
But around the same time of year, isn't it?
It's like, yeah, it's normally May. So this is happening a little bit early. But to me, that says they've got something a bit more interesting to show.
Yeah. I think it's significant that MWC itself is at this time of year as well. Because we know from looking at web traffic and from looking at sales of products and all of those things that actually this is a pretty dead time of year. So there's a real benefit to all of them to creating this level of interest because they are a series of upgrades. They're not brand new products, really. But it's really exciting to get people to get all those early adopters who will spend extra money on the latest flagship to create a bit of interest and to create a bit of drive into the rest of the year, actually. Because what happens now is people will decide what upgrade they're going to get, even if they don't get it now.
Yeah.
So the benefit to your question, David, I think, is kind of collectively creating interest where people aren't really buying stuff in February. Everyone's skint.
Yeah,
I know I am.
So the question I wanted to ask really is to do with, you know, like smartphones have been fantastically exciting to tech fans for a while, but a phrase you've used before, Chris, is peak smartphone. And are we at peak smartphone?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I wrote a blog probably more than a year and a half ago, maybe even 2 years, like saying, have we hit a ceiling when it comes to the tech? And I think in a lot of respects, yes, we have. The screens are significantly high res enough, like the Sony Xperia Premium Z5 Premium is 4K, but it just really doesn't need to be on a screen that's lower than 6 inch. I mean, even the TVs,
the human eye has a limit to how much it can.
Even the TVs
benefit.
We've seen that,
Apple
like
propaganda.
Even the TVs we've seen that are 4K that are smaller than, you know, 40 inches, almost like, what's the point? So on a phone it just seems ridiculous, but it doesn't look like at the moment LG or Samsung are going to go down that route. It seems like Sony just did it for a kind of,
well, it gets you a headline.
We've done
it?
The first, world's first. They like the world first title on their devices.
So I'll give you my ultra high definition anecdote, which is my work phone is an LG G4, which has an extremely high resolution screen. It's a beautiful screen. It's noticeably better than the screen of any other smartphone I've used. I broke it recently and borrowed a Moto G, a £100 phone, for just to tide me over. I've had the LG G4 back for several weeks and I haven't swapped back over because the Moto G's battery life is so much better. And that's a fact. That's a combination of factors. But the reality is, without even thinking about it, I'm just happier using, on the face of it, a crappier phone because it's a little bit more robust as well. But it just lasts more than a day on charge, and that's more important to me. It transmits.
This is the one. Everything has hit a bit of a ceiling. Screens, cameras, even the processors are powerful enough to do kind of console, almost console level gaming, and the only thing that really hasn't had a big breakthrough is the battery tech.
Yeah.
Which, when it comes, will be a massive deal.
Yeah.
But it's just, when is it going to come? We don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading a piece the other day about how Moore's Law is levelling out now as well. And you say about
always,
the tech.
That was always an artificial construction anyway. They've now acknowledged this.
Yeah, exactly.
They were actually deliberately doing it to keep up with what he predicted.
What is Moore's Law? Explain Moore's Law for the listener.
It is, I might not know the numbers now. I think every 18 months, they...
processor capacity doubles, essentially.
Exactly, they predicted this would happen. And it's now been revealed that they have actually, the processor companies have been consciously planning their developments in order to coincide with that. Although the fact that they're able to do that, obviously, is a sort of a vindication of it anyway.
To Scott's point, like, overall, what it means is things should get twice as fast every 18 months. And I guess the point is that that's no longer necessarily the case.
No, and the things that seem to be slowing us down are developments in battery technology and in the network, the internet networks themselves, so 5G, and these are things that the mobile phone makers can't do themselves. You know, they have to wait for the network to catch up, and they have to wait for the battery technology to catch up, so they're sort of trying to make incremental changes and then blow them up in the press. So it's an interesting sort of development, and that's probably why the changes that you see at these things are smaller than you're used to.
Although the market doesn't seem to have slowed down at all. No. The upgrade cycle, as you say, Chris, if anything, is getting quicker. Anything else we should expect to see at MWC? There's some VR products, maybe?
Definitely. I'm not the expert on VR. Lewis is our resident VR expert, but we definitely will be seeing lots of VR stuff. It's going to be... 2016 is really going to be the kickoff year for VR.
They always say that, though.
No, but this year it has finally come.
There are actual products these days, at least. Whether there's the,
because we're getting to the point where you will be able to go buy consumer products of the VR headsets.
We had the same thing with 3D, didn't we?
There was
a CES a few years back when they said it was going to be all about 3D, and then it just never took off.
3D. I mean, the problem with 3D is 3D is in and of itself a bit crap. I mean, it's just kind of like, it's not as good an experience as 2D.
And I think the same is true of virtual reality.
Possibly, yeah, but virtual reality at least isn't like an additional product category, if you like. You know, if you're a gamer, it's adding a different experience to it. It may well be a complete chimera, as those things are. I mean, the same economic forces are at play is getting people to buy new hardware in order to then buy new versions of games they've played before. But, you know, and let's face it, reality itself is awful, so some kind of improved virtual
reality. Try and make it virtual. I want to know if you actually look forward to going to something like MWC, because everyone that I speak to seems to approach it with a combination of fear and loathing. So is it something that is fun to do, or is it just exhausting?
It's both, really. MWC is my favourite out of CES, MWC and IFA. Mostly because the show is quite compact, so from our point of view, I can get from the press room to a stand and see something and back
The listener's heart is bleeding for you right now.
In not very, you know, long.
Is that also because it's not in Vegas? Does that help?
From a personal point of view, yeah, Vegas isn't entirely my point, like, isn't really my kind of thing. But
you don't trust yourself in Vegas.
It's not that.
What about sharing an apartment with your colleagues for a week?
That's pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we do anyway. Yeah. I should point out to the listeners that we all live in a large apartment, so that seems fine. Okay, good. Well, I think we've sufficiently covered the entire mobile market and MWC, so we'll take a short break and then we'll move on when we talk about, guess what, Apple. That was a short break. So, David, Scott, one of the big stories this week has been Apple and its dealings with the feds. So, David, maybe you could explain what's going on with Apple and the FBI.
Yeah, sure. The FBI have got hold of the iPhone 5C, which belonged to Saeed Rizwan Farooq, who was one of the shooters in the San Bernardino massacre.
Couldn't afford a better phone? Not something to joke about.
Anyway, the fact that it's a 5C is actually significant because this means it has slightly weaker encryption measures built into it. Sure. And the FBI, who have so far been baffled by the passcode on the phone, would like Apple to break into it for them. And a court order has now been set up to require this. And Apple are pushing back. Tim Cook has published an open letter saying that they will not comply with this, and they think it sets a dangerous precedent. And they've said that it would be a backdoor into iPhones, and it would compromise the security of iPhone owners around the world.
So this is a good thing, really. We broadly speaking agree with Apple's stance on this, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you can't set a precedent where you can give security agencies the power to break into absolutely anything they want, and you know. This sounds like Android users could be smug, but actually once you start breaking open the tech behind the Apple phone, you can start breaking into anything that it runs. So I read Tim Cook saying the other day that it would be like giving them a master key to every bank, shop and building in the city. And if they were to give over the encryption key for the older iPhones, it would be able to break into all of those sources as well. So yeah, it's dangerous, and I can see why all the tech companies are saying that we should keep that locked up and keep people's privacy intact.
It is interesting though, when you say that all the tech companies are agreeing with them, there was a bit of a lull of silence first.
Yes,
which I sense was them sort of feeling out the ground. We had this thing where Edward Snowden, we were talking about this before, it's a really strange combination of people that have got involved in this. Edward Snowden came out and said that this is a really terrible thing, what the FBI are trying to do, and that there's been this silence from Google, which he takes as them taking the side of, he said they're not on the people's side because they've been silent. And then I think about 7 hours later, Sundar Pichai pops up and says, no, we agree with Apple and we support them.
And now we've also seen WhatsApp.
Yeah, WhatsApp.
Which is interesting because these are companies who... are accused often of their business models actually invading people's privacy, although it's all above board and at least in principle knowing on behalf of the end user. But it's an interesting coalition of tech companies that have at least finally queued up to
pay lip service to the concept of privacy. Sure.
There's no surprise that WhatsApp have come out in support, though, when you know about their background as a company. It's a Ukrainian guy who grew up with dealing with the secret police. He was always very...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Always developed products that he wanted to keep messages private. It's been built into the DNA of WhatsApp. He's always been on the side of keeping things end-to-end encrypted.
Now owned by Facebook.
Yes, but it's bred into the DNA.
Somewhat undermines that particular.
And he in particular has come out and said that Apple shouldn't give up the encryption key.
Can Apple not just, I don't really know about this, but can Apple not just take the device, basically pull the information that the FBI want off it and then give it to them.
No. The way they have to do it is they have to create a new bespoke piece of software, effectively a substitute operating system, which they will then install on this phone, and that will have had all of the security measures stripped off it, so that the two main ones are the fact that it potentially could erase itself if you get the passcode wrong 10 times in a row, and there are also delays built in. So if you get the passcode wrong 6 times in a row, then it locks the phone for a minute before you can try again. Because the, and this is sort of shockingly low tech, but the FBI's plan to break in is to use brute force. They want to try all the passcode measures. And you can do that in a sort of computerized way, which does it really quickly. Instead, they'll be delayed, and it will take, I think they measured it as either 3.5 or 4.5 years to try all the passcodes.
What I really want to know is whether, as soon as the FBI got the phone, they did try 1, 2, 3, 4 just to see if they could get it.
You've got to, really, haven't you?
You've got to give it a go, haven't you? You've got 10 goes. That's your first one locked up.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I find it terrifying that your phone can be mobilely wiped after 10 attempts. Surely, after you've had a few drinks, you can get towards 10 quite easily.
That's why I've never set
had, had a few drinks.
I can confirm this is not correct.
But yeah, but this is something that you have to opt into. So it's automatically set up so that after 6 it will have a delay. But the erasing thing, fortunately, is something you have to choose to have on. If you were
saying because I've in the dim and distant past when I had an iPhone, I definitely locked it, but it could be unlocked.
Yeah,
I just had to go through a series of.
Wasn't quite that catastrophic.
Yeah. So this is great. Kudos to Apple. Slightly less kudos, but kudos to all the other companies that have slowly queued it behind.
Yeah, we want to say that Microsoft came out today as well and made a statement backing it. We'll see if their CEO, actually, Satya Nadella, actually comes out and personally says it. But yeah, they made a company-wide statement.
But haven't they all caved before? I mean, isn't this the whole, the whole Edward Snowden thing? Is that all of these tech companies have in the past passed on data to the US and the UK spooks?
They have, and
so
Apple has acknowledged that they have complied in areas where they feel it is appropriate, where it is, legal. But what's different in this case is the fact that they have to hack past their own security measures. They've always said if they can do it without doing that,
so
then they will.
So they'll pass on the information, and this is not just Apple. This is certainly Google. I think Microsoft as well. They've passed on information when requested by the government. Under whose aegis they operate, when requested by the security forces, they passed on, in principle at least, anonymized data they've got about users, which is why we see, all these spooks, as I say, going through people's information in order to find, in principle, terrorists.
Yeah, but I don't think it would be fair to say that all the companies are equal on this one. Google has been, go and look up the fact yourself and make your own decision, because it is subjective. but by multiple sources they have been named as the most privacy hostile technology company of any of the major companies. They comply on a far more regular basis. I think it's fair to say that Apple occasionally comply with these sort of orders. Google persistently do around the world, often with regimes that would not necessarily approve of personally.
The current UK government.
Of course.
But
Google have supported this, but I will not believe it until they do something, if they put their money where their mouth is, as Apple have now done.
And for some people, this is a key decision maker when they're choosing between iPhone and Android.
Yep.
I don't know about that, to be honest.
Well, I would think, I think if you are, there's that saying, isn't there? If you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And Google's whole business model, from which we all benefit, incidentally, professionally, but is to do with harvesting information about people anonymously and then using that information to deliver advertising, essentially. And some people feel uncomfortable with that. And it is indisputably the case that Apple's business model is more to do with selling products to people, and therefore, in principle at least, your information is more secure, which I guess is supported by this particular instance.
That was basically my point, just that I know people that deliberately use iPhone for the privacy benefits, whereas I personally use Android because I don't mind giving that information up because I get a lot in return.
Yeah. And you are very, very much in the majority. I think as a society, we have pretty much given up on the idea of privacy. I think we talk about privacy and we don't like the idea of giving it up in abstract. But when it comes down to it, we always sign up for these things. We sign up for Facebook. If it gives us a free product.
Yeah. You know, Facebook and LinkedIn are really interesting examples, aren't they? Because we're overtly pushing information at those companies, which they then monetize. That's the whole deal. It's why Facebook's ultimately more successful than Twitter, because it has a more rounded grasp of who you are and is able then to deliver advertising in a more effective manner. I wonder if there's a difference to be drawn between privacy in general and specific areas of privacy. I think we'd all feel uncomfortable with sharing, say, medical data, whereas my name, photos of me, date of birth, I'm reasonably comfortable with. But then I don't put pictures of my daughter on Facebook, which, you know, some people do, and that's, you know,
lots of people do.
Yes, they do. I do put some pictures on there, but, like, for instance, you know, not when she was newborn, and we sort of ration it a little bit, but then we do share them with family on WhatsApp. So, you know, that's more to do with general public seeing things than it is to do with worrying about sharing that data with a third party.
I use Apple's Photo Stream to share pictures of my kid with the grandparents. So there you go, Apple, more trust. I don't know if that's true.
Okay, great. So what we're saying is trust Apple, don't trust anyone else. Agreed?
Done.
Fairly.
Okay, we're going to move on shortly to talk about something called Challenger Bank. So we'll see you on the other side of this. Good, okay. So, Scott, this week you've been looking at something called Challenger Banks. What the hell is a Challenger Bank?
Glad you asked. I've become mildly fascinated by the concept of a Challenger Bank, and it's quite a broad term, so I'll just try and, as succinctly as possible, explain it. Basically, after the financial crash in 2008-09, the EU changed the process and requirements to set up a bank. They made it a lot easier. They reduced the capital requirements from 100 million to a lot more of a manageable figure, which is proving difficult to get, but it's definitely a hell of a lot lower than 100 million. And also the licensing process now takes about 2 years.
Right.
And it's in a two-step, quite transparent process. So it's basically opening up the banking sector to new competitors. So a lot of people have been jumping in. You had the first set of banks such as Metro Bank, who you might have seen on the high street. The ones that I'm very interested in are the guys that are digital only. So they wouldn't have a branch.
Yeah.
And they are basically offering banking services solely through your mobile.
Right.
And these guys generally in the UK are Atom Bank, Mondo Bank and Starling. The only of the three that actually have a license to offer banking products at the moment is Atom. Mondo are very close and Starling a little bit further behind. In Germany, this actually is a little bit further along, and there's a bank called Fidor who are doing very well in the German market, and they're actually looking to expand into the UK market.
Sure.
So what these guys do is they're trying to bring banking to your mobile, like an Uber or a Facebook, or basically what Tom Blomfield, who is the head of Mondo Bank, says. He wants it to be one of those homepage apps that you use all the time. And what they'll do, it will give you a full showing of where your money's going, what's going out, what's coming in all the time. It will use the security measures on the phone so you don't have to keep logging into your mobile banking all the time, which is very irritating. You won't have to pay for financial exchange when you go abroad. And basically your current account will just live on your phone and you can do everything there.
And presumably, in much the same way as, you know, you mentioned Uber, we always talk about Uber, but a company that's disrupted a very staid industry. One of the biggest costs to banks, I presume, is real estate.
Yes.
They all have these huge high street shop fronts that are extremely expensive. So presumably, if these banks from the ground up are designed in this lean way, it should be, cheaper, or they should be able to
offer
better rates?
They're going to save a huge amount on real estate, and they're also going to save a huge amount on IT.
Yeah.
The banks have these huge, great, big, sprawling IT networks, and these guys can build it in a very lean way. Mondo actually are the only one, to my knowledge, that are building all of their banking software from scratch.
All right.
So they're building full stack, they call it, and that means that they can build it as lean as they want.
Yeah.
Atom Bank are actually building theirs off the back of a commodity software called FIS, so you can build a bank off the back of that quite quickly and easily. And they say that the advantage to that is that they can differentiate themselves with the front end. They can make the app very nice and they can just base it off the software. And then all the middleware is the stuff where it gets interesting, where they can start connecting in other services. Mondo disagree. They say that it needs to be full stack if it's actually going to ever differentiate itself from the established banks.
Sure. And they're presuming that what they're going to compete on convenience and rates and
So they'll save some costs. So you'll get slightly better rates on your overdraft options. Mondo Bank are only offering current accounts and overdrafts.
Right.
Whereas Atom Bank are going to offer a full range. So they're going to offer mortgages.
Right.
Savings and business services and things like that.
Okay.
That's where maybe they're being based off the established product helps them offer those sort of services. Problem is, if you want to get a mortgage, you have to talk to an advisor by law, and that sort of defeats the idea of being able to do everything through an app. So they're going to bypass that by going through brokers and linking all of these services come back into the app, and you can see everything through that platform. So it's trying to bring banking to the way that you do other things on your phone now.
That is such a classic thing of where law is behind tech, isn't it? This idea that, because I'm sure we've all been through the process where you go and speak to a broker and all they do is log into a web interface and find whatever's available on the market, but you have to speak to that human being to do that, which is on by any standards a ludicrous situation.
I mean, I also find it easy to trust a company that has a shop front and a person.
Sure.
Yes.
I'm very behind the times in this respect.
No. So trust is a huge, huge issue when it comes to challenger banks, because it's all well and good in trusting your taxi services to someone like Uber or entrusting your information to Facebook, as we were saying earlier. But when it comes to your hard-earned cash, it can be a lot harder to trust a new boy on the block. What they're trying to do in this sense is be as transparent as possible. These banks are very open about where your money comes from, where it goes, how you're using it. They open up the data. Basically, they've got these blogs where they show you all of their working, how they're going through the licensing process.
Sure.
And that is hopefully going to build trust. Also, they just need to make sure they get it right.
Yeah.
As long as nothing goes wrong and people start investing their money and bringing their money to these banks, they might be able to develop that trust.
It took a while to develop trust in online banking.
Yeah.
You know, and I still know people who don't. And I have one friend who, when he was putting his deposit in for his house, carried £20,000 worth of cash across London, which tells you how long ago it was that it was £20,000.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's a marketing and PR challenge. I should also say that nobody around this table has earned any cash in a hard-earned way. Certainly not recently.
Also, these banks have the advantage of not being tarred with the financial crash. So they have a level of trust there in terms of the fact that they haven't got that history of causing all the sort of financial problems that led up to the crash.
Yeah,
but I would feel like a really big bank is going to get bailed out by a government more readily than a small upstart, and that might not be true at all. But
yeah, I mean, you know, too big to fail is a thing. Yeah. The thing with these banks is that they're so lean and they're operating on such a low capital base that they should be pretty geared up to not going under. They're not going to overstretch themselves in terms of the products they offer.
They're not casino banks either, are they?
No.
So all they're doing is, if they're just doing your checking and balance, essentially, they're not exposed in the same way. It's highly unlikely that everybody who's, well, in principle, what they should do is have as much money loaned out as they're taking in savings.
Yeah, and also when it comes back to the trust thing, I was talking to Tom at Mondo Bank, he was saying that he doesn't want you to get married on the first date. It's a platform where you can go in, you get one account, you can put £50 on it. I have to say it's still in beta, but eventually, you can just put £50 in, see how the product works on your phone, see if you like it, maybe take your 50 quid abroad and see how that process works. They say your card's never going to get blocked, you're not going to get charged any fees when you're abroad, stuff like that. So, yeah, you can just give it a go, and then hopefully they want to just build up people's trust in the product over time.
It seems like probably one of their biggest barriers is getting all of this across to the consumer.
Yeah.
Because even the existing set of banks are all fighting to make you move with, you know, you join, we'll give you 100 quid, we'll give you 150 quid.
Yeah.
And it's really easy now, like with the current account switch thing that's been set up, it does it all automatically within 7 days.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
You can basically switch banks every few weeks and earn money, but nobody can be bothered. really. No.
We don't change banks, do we?
I haven't changed since I was 18.
There needs to
I've been with the same bank since I was 12 or 13, since I had like a junior account. And I know that I should change to get better deals, but I can't be bothered.
Yeah, they're trying to make it as easy as possible to switch. And what they're trying to do essentially is offer a product that makes you want to change. It's that much better than all the others.
It might well be that sort of thing as well, where when you see somebody else using their smartphone in this way, that's what sells it. You're like, oh, that's better than having to go and queue up in the bank or having to get on a call centre to someone for ages in order to get anything done. And that takes time, but it doesn't take quite as long as you think, you know, when it starts getting across.
No, and that's exactly what they're trying to do in terms of their marketing and the way they're...
And are they going to have decent-sized marketing budgets, do you think? Are they going to plough a lot of money into getting the message across?
So this is one thing where it becomes quite different to a normal startup in the fact that they are well-funded. Mondo Bank is has been funded to the tune of $8 million so far. But the problem is they do need to raise a certain amount of capital to launch. It's not $100 million, but they just to be a bank and to start lending, they need to have a base of possibly about $20 million to start and maybe about $60 million within their second year to get their full license. So that really does eat into their marketing budget. But as you said, Matt, where it comes down to it is word of mouth. They want to get... Basically, Mondo are giving out lots of free trials to get people on the platform, and then they want people to start tweeting about it, start talking about it, and how great a product it is. And that is free.
I would speculate as well that at least part of the plan for the founders is to get bought by one of the bricks and mortar.
Yeah, this is what one of my colleagues was saying the other day, and it's quite a cynical view, but it's definitely, if you're going to build it from the ground up like Mondo are, there's definitely an idea there that you're building a product that could easily be sold on.
Yeah.
Facebook will probably buy one.
Yeah, WhatsApp Bank. We'd all trust that, I think.
Facebook buys everything.
Maybe Apple could buy one. I'd prefer that.
Okay. Apple Bank?
Yeah, definitely.
Are we going to be able to walk up to a house in a few years and just tap on it and buy it?
Not in the UK.
With your phone.
I like it.
Yeah.
Touch ID.
Yeah. Good. Well, on that bombshell, I think we can bring this conversation to a halt. Thanks again for putting your ears through this, listener. Without you, we are just a bunch of guys talking about stuff. Let's be honest with you, we're also just a bunch of guys talking about stuff. But do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. Put podcast in the subject line. We'll be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, courtesy of our good friends Audio Technica. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye-bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.